Hey, welcome back, friends. I am Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, the show that helps you not run away from home. We believe that perfection is nonsense and peace is a perspective shift away. So this week, I didn't really have a perspective shift as much as like a shift in my sleeping. I've been really sick, and so I've been sleeping a lot. And recently, my husband, who he has a hard time, I could sleep anywhere. It's one of my spiritual gifts. He, not so much. So he has a hard time sleeping. So he's constantly getting different mattress, different this, different that, trying to make it to where he can sleep. And he recently got one of those memory foam toppers to the bed. And anyway, I was trying to be really positive and supportive about it because, like I said, I could sleep anywhere. So if he likes it, I'm like, fine, I like it. It's great. Well, so he said, how do you like it? I said, I think it's great. And I said, what about you? And he said, I think it's interesting. And if you guys are on Patreon, you'll know Katie used the word interesting to describe my bangs. And first of all, how dare you, Katie? That is so rude. But so really, it's kind of like how in parenting, maybe really means no. Interesting really means bad. So I asked him, how is the topper for you? And he said, it's interesting. He said, it kind of feels like sleeping in like bread dough. Like you sink in and then you really can't move unless you put a lot of effort in. I had been dreaming about like quicksand, and I think that's why. I think we're literally getting lost in our bed. So I don't know what that has to do with anything, but I felt like you should know that that's what's happening at the Thomas house. So this week was supposed to be Rebecca and I talking about conflict. You have another week to send in your problems for us to solve about marriage, conflict, whatever. Send your emails to hello@momstrugglingwell.com because she is on vacation. And so, whoopsie daisy, we pushed it a week. But you are going to love this week's episode with Jim and Lynn Jackson. They've been on the show before. They actually have parenting advice. I don't really have any. Not serious advice, I don't think, but they know what they're talking about and they have impacted my parenting hugely. So today we're going to talk about the importance of establishing our own identity before we start working on our kids' identities. We're going to talk about reconciling the hurt that we have with our own parents so that it doesn't kind of run into our parenting with our kids. We're going to talk about sibling conflict, when to step in, when to let them handle it themselves. We're going to talk about bedtime troubles, how to make that not a dumpster fire. And then finally, technology and what role does that play? How do we navigate it and manage it instead of just being afraid of it, which is where I like to be. So let's go ahead and jump right in. You're probably going to want to take notes because it's all just so good. Hi, Jim and Lynn. Welcome back to the show. How are you today?
We are so good. We're so excited to see you.
We're
again.
Great, Emily. We miss you. We miss your kids too.
I know it. You just need to be in Texas more. But I actually have not. I've one time been in Minnesota in my life.
Well, this would be a good time. It's going to snow a foot tomorrow.
Oh, maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah, but we're heading out of town too. We're flying out tonight.
So. Oh, where are you going?
San Diego.
So nice. Are you going to teach somewhere? What are you doing?
Yeah, we'll be at a church, La Jolla Presbyterian Church down in San Diego, and then some little R&R while we're there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in San Diego, you need that. I hope you have so much fun. I know y'all are a little bit under the weather, and so you need to go somewhere sunny.
Yeah, we've been fighting off the winter bugs that grow in crowds in malls here because everybody goes indoors to the mall, and so they all pass germs.
Oh, yeah, that's a good ew.
That's how that works.
Yes. Okay, so y'all have been on the show two previous times, and everybody loves you, and you guys have personally impacted my parenting greatly. The only thing that's not my children's drawings that are on my refrigerator is y'all's magnet of the triangle, the pyramid thing.
Yeah. We love that. Yeah.
Will you please go over that because it's just so foundational?
Yeah, the magnet. In fact, we've developed a saying at Connected Families that the magnet says it all.
It does.
It really is the framework. It's the outline for how we teach parents to think and then trust God, Holy Spirit, to sort of uniquely make whatever they choose to do based on looking at that framework, their own. So we don't really teach so much about a method. We teach about a framework of how to think about parenting. And the framework starts with our foundation. We build a relationship with Christ, identity. We have supportive community around us who build us as individuals up and help us remember who we are and whose we are, so that our identity is established before we start harping on our kids to be okay so that we can be okay.
No kidding. No kidding. Right? Yes. If we get it backwards, it's really bad for them and us.
Yeah. That's the foundation that's at the base of this framework that we teach. And when we work on that as parents, we become people of grace, and the people around us get a message from our lives, not necessarily the words we say, but they just know they're safe with us. And so you, Emily, you know us and you've been around us, and it's our hope and our prayer that because we build a strong foundation, you get a message from us that says, Emily, you're safe with us. We're for you. We're not against you. We believe in you. We care about you, and we're not going to try to fix you in order for us to be okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
And when that's well in place, then the parent can dive into connecting with their child. And that's the next principle above foundation, is connect, both in the just having fun and communicating you're loved and enjoyed in the everyday interaction of life, which is such an important message for kids to get. But then in the midst of struggle and conflict, to get a message you are loved no matter what. And it's such an opportunity for the grace of the gospel to come alive. It's the golden opportunity of misbehavior, is to communicate you are loved no matter what. And when kids feel loved by us, they feel safe with us and loved, then they're open to our coaching, which is really where we build values and skills for kids to, to succeed in life and to walk in God's calling for them. And we communicate a message both in the good times of family life and in the tough times that you are called and capable. You're called and capable of walking in God's purposes. You're called and capable of making a wiser choice than you're making right now. You're called and capable of using your good gifts for honor, not for misbehavior. So there's lots of ways this called and capable message flows out of our coaching that really empowers kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the top of the framework is correct. And parents, so we're parent coaches, and we have a team of parent coaches at Connected Families. And parents connect with us because they've got a problem they want to fix with their kids. Something's going, my child doesn't ever, they won't eat, they won't go to bed, they won't do their homework. They keep picking on their sister, whatever, right? Any list of misbehaviors. And we've tried everything and we can't make it stop. We want help. Mm-hmm. Help us correct this. And they put all their focus and all their energy into correcting their kids, which is really a different way of saying, I want to fix the behavior. And we invite parents
with a punishment.
Usually with a punishment or some form of consequences that are intended to fix the behavior. Through the lens of this framework, we invite parents to sort of start at the bottom up on their way to correction. So that's why whenever we problem solve with people, we want them to understand this framework, because we're going to refer to it over and over and over again. No matter what the problem is that parents connect with us about to correct, we're going to say, well, correction is the tip of the iceberg. If there's an issue going on, there's all kinds of stuff going on underneath it, one of which is the four actions you're taking as a parent to build your foundation, to make sure you connect, to be proactive, to be coaching and teaching your kids the stuff that they need to know. And then when it's time to correct them in the simplest fashion, all we're here to do is remind you of what's true. You're safe with me. You're loved no matter what. You're called and capable of making wise decisions. I'll hold you accountable to that. And you're responsible for what you've done, and you're responsible not to experience a negative consequence in hopes that that negative consequence will motivate you to do the positive thing later. But you're responsible to make right what you've made wrong. It's a goal of restoration, of reconciliation, which is really after the heart of the gospel.
Yeah. That whole framework has been so instrumental to the way that I have parented my kiddos. And I think it's especially hard when there's a child who's especially hard for you. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm a much more solid parent to my son than my daughter, because in a lot of ways, I understand him, I get him, and she is more of a mystery and pushes my buttons way more than he does. And so I think for her, I was trying to shame her into acting better. And your framework helped me realize number one, it's not nice. it doesn't work.
Nice.
But I didn't know I was doing it. Like, we never set out to be like, oh, I'm going to destroy this person's sense of identity. That is never what we want to do.
Right. Exactly.
So I happen to be somebody who sleeps very well, but I gotta tell you, I share a wall on my bedroom with my son, who in his sleep, he likes to kick, and he kicks the wall. And I know that feels like should be an easy fix, but we've tried a bunch of stuff and homeboy keeps kicking the wall. But something that has really helped me not hear the wall be kicked and not hear my dear husband snoring is a white noise machine by Yoga Sleep. Yoga Sleep has been making products for sleep for over 50 years, and white noise is a natural approach to better sleep and relaxation. I can tell you the people of Yoga Sleep sent me 3 different noise machines. My children took 2 of them. I got one, and we all are sleeping really, really well. So Yoga Sleep has a 101-night promise, so you can try them risk-free for 101 nights. I promise it will not take that long to realize you love it. They also are made in the United States, which I love. So go to yogasleep.com/MSW and save 20% on a sound machine for natural sleep for the whole family. That's yogasleep.com/MSW to get 20% off. yogasleep.com/MSW. So I know that y'all have a podcast, and it is called Connected Families as well.
Yep.
And you are doing different series, and you, Jim, you said that you're doing one on regarding father wounds, and it's 4 dads.
Yeah.
Is it already out?
Yeah, the podcast. It's a 5-part series. We've launched it. Yep. And people can easily go to our website at connectedfamilies.org and look up our podcast. And of course, once you do that, you go right into the archives of all the other stuff that we've done. We do podcasts sort of a series at a time. And this, the series that we chose to do, my father passed away this fall. And that was really hard. Thank you. Yeah. And, but you know, I've been on a healing journey with my dad for a long time. And we just felt like, and it's really especially to dads, like, let's talk to dads about being a dad. And there's 5 podcasts. One of the really 2 of the 5 issues or episodes kind of focus on the father relationship.
Mm-hmm. With their dads.
And what did I learn from my dad? What are the unwritten rule book that was put in me by the way that my dad parented me? And how can I think about that wherever there are wounds? And just about everybody's got father wounds of some sort, whether they're aware of them or not. So becoming aware of those wounds is one of the things that we talk a little bit about. And then, you know, how do we become people of grace, people who are settled, people who can go back with unconditional love to our parents and set them free from all of the expectations that we had that they would be this or that or the other thing that they weren't, that hurt us, and get into some fashion of a restored relationship if that parent is wanting that and is safe to do that with. Now, if they're not, that's a different issue, and we've talked about that as well. But we still, as humans, if we've got resentment or bitterness really toward either of our parents, it's going to be hard for us to move on in life the way we really want, in the joy and in the peace of the Lord, if we haven't reconciled that hurt to the degree that we can. And so that's a part of this that we talk about in that podcast. But it really, as it relates to this framework, like I said, the framework says it all. It's about our foundation as parents. A piece of the foundation we all have as parents is that we were parented by somebody. Might have been our biological parents. It might have been adoptive parents. It might have been foster parents. It might have been institutional parents, even, you know, in some cases. But we were parented. And as we were parented, in the broadest sense of that term, a rule book got written on our heart about what it means to take care of children. And we live from it. Do we know what that rule book is? Mm. And do we like that rule book or not? And are there some changes we'd like to make? So the foundational work we as parents need to do, if we're going to parent as effectively as we hear parents say they want to parent, is to go into that foundation, which has nothing to do with how my child is behaving or what they're doing in life right now, and tend to matters of our own hearts. Take captive our thoughts to Christ's obedience in the biblical sense. Yeah.
Which is really about claiming truth over that relationship. It's not about, oh, I can't think that, you know, angry thoughts about my mom or my dad, but mm-hmm. it's about, wow, what was really true? What was going on in their lives when they were struggling with parenting? How might God be using that difficult relationship to grow me and my trust of him? You know, so it's leaning into God's grace and his perspective on that relationship versus just trying to suppress our hurt or anger towards our parents.
Yeah. So that's a deep issue. Could talk a long time about it if you want. But, you know, kind of the last thing I want to say about it is that in my journey with my dad, just to be very practical, when I was in my 20s and even into my early 30s, I had a judgment in my heart against my dad. I drew a conclusion out of those judgments that my dad didn't love me, that he screwed up, that he hurt me, and that somehow in a secret sort of a way, and I never said this out loud, it would have sounded ridiculous as a young believer, but I wanted to punish my dad for the bad that he'd done to me. By being distant, by staying away, by not, you know, recreating with him when he wanted to recreate in certain ways, or not being around him when he would watch football. I just like, no, I'm staying away. And then, you know, and then at some point even keep my family away from that man.
Mm-hmm.
Which now the poison started to spread to my wife and my kids as well, right? So that was a judgment in my heart. I had to get a hold of it. I submitted myself to the counsel and confrontation of trusted people in my lives. Who, you know, all challenged me, like, so your dad didn't do very good, obviously. So what was in his heart? Was his heart to do bad to you, or did he just not know any better? And, you know, I came to a place of wrestling and journeying. It's like he hurt me, not intentionally, but because he didn't know any better. And he had some anger issues, and they kind of would explode all over because of passion he had about certain things. And that was hurtful. But then I let the he's responsible for that. But I'm responsible for letting the resentment grow and the anger and the bitterness and the attitudes that I harbored. And then those didn't end up just being about my dad. They spread into other relationships.
Yes. And it's so important to be in community so that we can be challenged to enter in if it's safe, or we can be warned, this is not safe. You shouldn't do that, even though you're feeling like you should.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you did that.
Yep. And a key point was when a mentor in that context of relationship looked at me, a good friend, and he just said, so I know your dad did stuff you didn't appreciate. What did he do that you appreciated? And when he first asked it,
I don't want to talk about it. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it. Yeah, nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
But over time, as I grappled with that question, I came to realize a lot of things about my dad that I could appreciate and verbalize to him and go to him in an effort to reconcile and restore and apologize for the bitterness that I had harbored. And darned if in that context, my dad didn't see what I was doing and then come back at me with, you know, Jimmy, I'm so sorry. And I wish that I had been. And I know
how
that
healing.
I gave you, yeah, and it was really, so when Dad died in October, I'm, you know, really blessed by God to be able to say, hey, Dad, no regrets, we're good.
Go to glory,
yeah.
That's so good. So, I love that. And that, I mean, if we were able to do that with our parents, I mean, knowing how hard it is to parent ourselves.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're able to have some additional grace with our parents for how it went.
Yeah. Well, and the way that works into, you know, most people's relationships maybe aren't as dramatic as mine was with my dad, but it's like the parents come in and they watch us parent, right? And then they go, you know, you would have never got away with that.
Or, oh, nice.
Or why are you letting her do that? Or what are you thinking? Why don't you just nip this in the bud? Take charge. You're the parent. You're not their friend, you know, and so then the parents start to criticize and we, what do? We look at them, we go, oh, thank you, Dad, or thank you, Mom, for your input. It's so great to hear your perspective and it's so helpful to me. No, we go, shut up. Mind your own business. If you're going to keep treating me this way, I'm not coming for Thanksgiving.
We actually did a podcast right somewhere a couple weeks before Christmas on how to parent in front of your own parents.
Yeah.
And it was
so
like
important.
People went nuts over it because it's such a hard topic.
Yeah. Through the lens of the framework that we teach. Yeah.
That's so, I love everything y'all do. I tell my mother-in-law, I love her, but she has opinions and she will tell them. And she, with reckless abandon. And so I just tell her, thank you for your passion. I appreciate it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
You got a lot of passion. I'll take that into consideration and I'm going to make my own decision. Thank you.
Yeah. Hers are, she more has opinions about my plants and how they're all dying. It's fine.
Oh, send her up here. Mine are too.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. So, in an effort to get free parenting help, I am going to ask.
That's what this is.
That's all this is.
That's good. We're glad.
I have asked Katie and Rebecca, and I know my parenting problems, but I wanted to ask a parenting problem from each of the three of us. And because we all have kiddos in different stages, Rebecca has a lot more kids, a lot younger kids, and my kids are older. And so anyhow, are you ready to work something out?
Yeah, let's try.
Okay, let's try. Okay, so here is my sister Katie's problem.
Issue. Let's call it an issue.
Okay, let's call it an issue.
Or challenge.
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 So now let me stop you just quick and I'll tell you why. Because when we call it a problem, we automatically put a dark cloud of judgment over it.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah.
And try to fix it.
You know, Lynn used to have this thing that instead of this is a problem, this is...
An opportunity.
Yeah.
To teach values and skills.
Yes, like let's view it as an opportunity to teach values and skills rather than as a problem. Because what do we got to do with problems?
Fix them.
Yeah, so okay. Let's not fix things. Let's look at the opportunity.
Okay. Well, I love it.
To build values and wisdom in our kids. Yeah.
Well, here's an opportunity from my sister. She would like some wisdom to know the difference between sibling fights and what's going to scar them for life, like the younger one. She said, it seems like there's a fine line between being shut down by a sibling and moving on with your day and being shut down repeatedly and then internalizing that so that you just feel like you suck as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. And it really gets back to what do we view our role in sibling conflict is? Do I view it as I have to come in and fix this? Or am I facilitating growth? Which is a whole different role. If I come in as the judge or the cop or anything like that, then I'm owning that problem. But if I keep the kids owning that problem, then I come in a different role. And I come in as a coach, as a facilitator, an encourager. So your sister's really wise in differentiating between something that happens occasionally where maybe there's kind of an overt winner and loser and something that's building patterns and identity in kids' life. Mm-hmm. And when you see patterns and identity, like I'm the aggressor and I'm the victim, developing over the long haul, then it's important to intervene. But the key thing is how you intervene. So if our listeners could see, I've got one hand above the other. And the taller hand is representing the more powerful child. And we tend to, when we intervene, we try to push down the power of that child. Stop it. That's not okay. You be respectful. And so then that communicates messages to both kids, the more powerful child, usually the older sibling or the more verbal sibling, that you're a problem, you're misbehaving, you need to be stopped. And it communicates to the younger child that you're a victim that mommy needs to protect. So if we think in terms of how do I come under the younger or weaker child and bring them up, support them up to the level of the other child, then it's just, it's encouraging, it's opportunity, it's building skills. So we started this actually when our daughter was a year and a half and our son was four. And there was a pattern developing of aggressor and victim. And, you know, I would initially charge in there to fix it and to get angry
at him.
Stop
that. I can still hear Lynn's voice in my head. That is not okay to treat her like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's not.
My baggage and my older brothers.
It's true. It's not okay to treat another human being like that. So, but there's an opportunity here to help our child understand what that's about. Or there's an opportunity to teach them that they have to depend on us to solve this for them by our big power. Because now we're going to have a bigger power than the aggressor. And we're mm-hmm. going to take power over them to make them do what we want them to do. Which is the very thing they're doing to their sibling that we'd like to stop. But we've just modeled the very opposite.
Oh, bada bing. Mic drop on that. So we come in, enter with empathy for both kids. This is so hard. I remember how tough it was with my siblings when I was little. So let's just calm down and let's see if we can figure this out. And then we begin to support the younger child, making sure that they're safe and they've been comforted if they're hurt or whatever. But then to support the younger child and facilitate them talking to their sibling.
Oh, okay.
So that I'm out of the middle of that relationship. I'm letting them own the relationship, own the problem, and I'm just kind of equipping the youngest child with whatever skills they need to effectively confront the older or more verbal child. So when Bethany was a year and a half, it was as simple as, Bethany, your face is upset. Are you sad or mad? I'm sad. Oh, good. You figured that out. Okay, now you tell Daniel that. Tell Daniel. You can do it. Daniel, I'm sad. Oh, good job. Daniel, did you hear what she said? She said she's sad. Yeah, you were listening. That was awesome. Okay, I think you guys can work this out. And then you just facilitate from there. So do you see, there was no squashing of the more powerful child. There was facilitating, structure, encouragement, protection, you know, support, protection. Sometimes I went and I held her if she was really afraid, but I did not get in the middle of that relationship. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. It's tricky because, okay, so let me ask about this. In a case of like something happened at school and you weren't there, or like you weren't there to talk about it. You should talk about it later. Does it go the same way where you kind of let the weaker one talk first and communicate?
So I'm not sure I understand the scenario. What happened at school? Like the two siblings got into a conflict at school?
Yeah, like, or just you're not around when it happens. You just kind of circle back and have the same kind of conversation play out in the same way.
Sure. So maybe. I mean, I think there's actually a piece of research about this that we read in one of the magazines. I can't even remember, about sibling relationships. And they did there was a study done with kids who were aged 3 to 5 who were siblings, and they put them in a room, and they were, you know, behind one of those two-way mirrors, and they just observed them playing in a room full of toys. I can't remember whose toys they were. Were they theirs or just neutral toys? I think they were neutral toys.
Like, they both
like put you in a room full of neutral toys, and you start playing, and the kids started a conflict. It was normal and natural, an average of every 9 minutes about a new topic. New toy, new something. And the long-term predictor of how those kids did as grown-ups, siblings, was far less about how often they fought and far more about how they fought and about what happened. And in fact, one of the biggest predictors of siblings growing up to be, you know, kind of disenfranchised from each other was that they didn't do anything together after a while. Because too hard, too much pain, you know, too much difficulty. They studied families with lots of kids versus families with fewer kids. And the families with lots of kids tended to have healthier relationships, even though parents were far less involved in sibling squabbles as they were growing up. Parents didn't have the energy and effort. But then what the parents had to figure out was, okay, we can't get involved in all their fights, but we've got to establish some basic rules here that are going to work. And so one of them, we view it through the lens of our framework, is I can't make this be about me. This isn't my problem. It's their problem. So, you know, how do we engage with our kids' conflicts so we know that they know that it's their problem, not our problem? When we bring our big emotion to their conflict, now it becomes ours too. Now it's my problem. So stay out of that fray. So it's your problem. And, you know, think about it. If you're arguing with somebody and somebody comes to help you and starts getting involved, you don't like that. But if they say, hey, you guys are struggling, I noticed, do you need help or do you got it? You know, what are you going to say? You're probably going to say, well, we got it. Okay, we got it. So there's very distant, very minimal, like, okay, you're having a conflict. You know it's a conflict, and it seems like you know that you got it. So, okay, great. I'll watch and see, and if I feel like you need help because you're hurting each other, then I'll get involved. Mm-hmm. It's up to you.
And a big piece of it is building values outside of that time. Like in our family, we're working to learn to speak the truth in love. You talk about that scripture in Ephesians, and you talk about the value of it. And you help kids to sort of embrace a mutual goal of, let's try to find a solution where we both feel cared about. So I tell parents, avoid the F-bomb. Don't talk about fair.
Oh, I was like, whoa. Okay.
Because fair is going to never, you know, it's like 51.0%. You know, you're never going to agree on fair. But can you reach a solution where you both feel cared about? You both feel important in the decision.
Yeah.
And that's a more inspiring goal for kids. So, you know, just that kind of work outside of the conflict can be part of what helps turn that barge of sibling conflict.
Yeah, that's so good. And I think when we're really quick to get involved, it does signal some of our own special baggage.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, part of the baggage is we know where this is going if we don't get involved. Well, why is it going there? It's going there not because we don't get involved good enough. It's going there because we've allowed our kids to develop a value system around depending on us to barge in with our big energy to solve all of this. And we've done very little to be proactive, like Lynn is talking about, to help them learn to value this relationship and learn conflict skills in the context of playing with Legos. And what does that person feel? And what would that person say to this person? And, oh yeah, remember how we were playing with Legos yesterday? And that Lego said to that Lego, well, it's your turn now to say that to your big brother or your sister. You can do it. you need some help? What do you know what to say? Or do you, you know, and then we kind of become, we get a step removed from this all and we become a coach rather than the manager of the conflict.
What if I told you that you can wear fine jewelry every day without it costing a fortune? There is a company that I love. I wear their earrings every day, and I want to tell you about them because I think you're going to love them too. They're called Mejuri. So with Mejuri, you can get ethically sourced fine jewelry without having to choose between high quality and fair prices. My very favorite earrings that I wear every darn day, like I said, are from Mejuri, and I never take them off. So Mejuri has new and exciting pieces dropping every Monday, which means that you can choose from a range of timeless styles that you can wear from day to night, and they're versatile enough to be styled with pretty much anything you own. What I love is their jewelry is 14 karat gold, so they don't wear out. It doesn't scratch easily. They also have sterling silver. They have pearls. They have diamonds. You never have to worry about taking off your jewelry or getting your pieces wet. Everything is low maintenance, but high quality, because fine jewelry is precious, but you don't have to be precious about it. So head to Mejuri.com/MSW and you'll get 10% off your first order. That's Mejuri.com/MSW for 10% off your first order. All right, ladies, I have some exciting news for your ears. EveryPlate is now owned by HelloFresh, and they've formed one company with offerings at different price points for you to enjoy. So now you can experience a meal delivery kit and have a full plate and an even fuller wallet with EveryPlate. So EveryPlate does the meal planning, shopping, and prepping for you. They deliver it right to your door, and it takes tons of time out of your mealtime duties. So recipes come together in about 30 minutes. It's definitely faster than a trip to the grocery store. I don't love paying a ton for my meals, but with the time and the money I saved, I was able to go on a bike ride with my kids, and I went to my favorite local coffee shop. So get 3 weeks of EveryPlate meals for only $2.99 per meal by going to everyplate.com and entering code MSW3. That's 40% off each of your first three boxes. That's a really great deal. So again, 3 weeks of EveryPlate meals for $2.99 per meal when you go to everyplate.com and enter coupon code MSW3. After I read y'all's book, and I think you had been on maybe the first time, I would make my kids, if they couldn't resolve the conflict on their own, I'd ask them. Mm-hmm. And if they couldn't, I'd have them sit down and we'd have a whole conversation about it. And just for some reason, sitting down and talking about the conflict was like torture. And they'd rather never have to.
I don't want to talk about that anymore.
They're not over it.
Again. I'm not that like that. That's like the consequences. We're going to dig into this and learn about it and, and invite you to unpack deeper things than you maybe want to unpack. So that motivated them to do better. Huh?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Sorted it right out.
Well, and it motivated them in the context of valuing all that deeper stuff. So even though they didn't go there and didn't want to unpack it all, they knew, like you were teaching them, that there's more going on here than just a fight over a toy. There's trust and there's wanting to be with each other and there's respect and there's all these issues. And so if you don't want to talk about all that, that's fine. Just remember those values when you're having conflicts.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I think we don't need to be afraid of it. Because it's an opportunity, right, Lynn?
It's an incredible opportunity.
Opportunity to teach and train our kids to have the kind of relationships, Lynn always says this, that Jesus bought for them on the cross.
It's true. And whenever my kids talk about fair, I say, well, we'd all be going straight to hell if fair was...
There you go.
Yep.
We don't jack around in the Thomas house.
Gospel truth to counteract that.
True justice.
Oh, man. Okay. I love it. All right. So let's talk about Rebecca's problem.
No.
So she... Oh, what? Let's talk about her opportunity.
Well, so you're learning so quickly.
Thank you. Not that quickly, but yes, I'm trying. Okay, so she has four children. One of them is an infant. And so this is what she wrote to me. Well, bedtime is pretty much the death of me. My three big kids share a room. They're 10, 9, and 6. And I feel like all my problems would be solved if they had their own room. What I want them to do is lay still in their beds while I kiss them sweetly goodnight and then walk out of the room. I think if they were each in their own room, this would work. But because they all share out of necessity right now, they bother each other, bicker, talk, fight, and they take forever to fall asleep. One of us has to sit in the room for over an hour and a half. The entire bedtime routine takes over 2 hours. Help.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That's
a lot of different angles on this one, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right.
My question is, how come they're not so tired by the time they go to bed? They just want to go to sleep.
Oh, so we need to wear them out during the day.
Well, there is something to that.
Yeah, that can help. And are they on screens later in the night, which tends to stimulate their brains and make it harder to fall asleep?
Yeah, so do we know, and this is, again, so think about this framework. Foundationally, what do I know and understand, and what am I learning about sleep and what matters? And then as a coach, how am I helping my kids understand that stuff so they can start even, you know, especially those older, those three older ones, how old again, 6, 9, and 11?
6, 9, and 10, I think, but yeah.
6, 9, and 10? Yeah, they're old enough to understand, like, why does sleep matter? Why do we need sleep? What happens when you don't have good sleep? What are the problems with people who don't get enough sleep? And so as a coach, not over here when we're trying to put them to bed, because that's not the time to do this teaching. It's like, you know, tomorrow, a casual conversation. Let's talk about sleep a little bit. I didn't get enough sleep last night. And how do you kids know that I didn't get enough sleep? So you invite the kids into sleep conversations just so that they start learning about why sleep matters. Because kids typically, all they think of sleep is torture.
True. Yeah.
And to help growing kids learn that, you know, and by the time they're teenagers, you know, now you can't get them out of bed and you can't. so, you know, it morphs. But yeah, just helping them develop a language and an understanding of why that matters as you build a foundation of understanding yourself and then empathize with how difficult it is and then do some teaching and coaching in connective ways that are light and not corrective in nature, but are proactive in nature.
Mm-hmm. And I would look at this as an opportunity to problem solve as a group and build values around this kind of thing. So our kids were actually a little younger than this when I problem solved bedtime with this. And we talk about this, I think, in the discipline.
You opportunity identified with that.
Yes, I got opportunity. Well,
he's a problem police over there.
A problem solver. I am going to say problem solving. It's an opportunity to problem solve and to communicate to kids. You are capable of solving problems with the most important people in your life, which is a really important message.
Yep.
So it
really
sounds like this mom is trying to manage the whole bedtime experience for these kids. And what ends up happening is that they all fall asleep cranky at each other. And that has an impact on our brains. It's like how we fall asleep then has, I can't remember the exact neurology of it, but it changes the way the blood flows in the brain, and it tends to integrate the memories from the day in sync with the mood that they fall asleep in.
Interesting.
So, you know, because like that must be important. And so that's how I'm going to view the memories of the day. So it tends to lead to more challenges in just basic wiring over time if I fall asleep cranky and anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And so just a little side note, one of the things that some parents have had real success with is having an affirmation journal be part of a bedtime routine. So, you know, each child has a little journal book. And parent writes in it, or if it's a younger child, draws a quick little picture about something that they just saw the child do well that day. Could be gratitude, could be a scripture, but you're using it to make a concrete memory of something really positive and encouraging for that child. And that has really changed some bedtimes for kids. So that's just one specific thing.
Well, but go back to, because I think the questions that you asked our kids back then, I was gone a lot in the evenings because I was a youth worker.
Yeah, I was going to go
and
back
I was
there.
Out. So I mean, you just took the kids through a beautiful process of questions.
Right.
That help them own the bedtime process.
Yes, I was going to circle back to that. I just wanted
okay,
to
good.
Say that one
good,
little
good,
thing because it related to the brain function. So, yeah, our kids were probably 4 through 8 at the time. And when Jim was doing youth work, I'd be the one trying to get them stuffed into their correct slots and get them to stay there. And that was like, it was like herding monkeys. You know,
yes.
They were just always, they were either mad at each other or they were just giddy and playing all over each other. And it was very difficult. And so I said to our kids, guys, how do you feel about bedtime?
Not at bedtime.
No, this is during the day. How do you feel about bedtime? I hate bedtime. I hate having to stop doing what I want to do and go to bed. And you always get so cranky at us. And oh, I know. It's really stressful because I know how much your body needs sleep, but it's not very clear to you sometimes. And it's just hard, isn't it? It's a hard time of day for all of us.
What was the impetus, the rationale for us? Did they make up that song or how did that work? Because there was this song about hating bed that our kids...
I made it up.
You made it up?
Yeah.
It was like, so yeah, let's validate that feeling. Right?
Yep. And I made up a song that we could march to bed to, which was, I hate bed. I hate bed. It makes me want to throw up. I wish that I could grow up. I hate bed.
I hate Ben.
And we'd march to Ben.
It was hysterical.
So, but it's a validation that it's hard for the kid.
Yeah, that it was hard. So then we started. So we got on the same team by recognizing bedtime is frustrating for all of us. Hmm. And then I asked the next key question, which was, how would we want to feel about bedtime? And of course, they gave me a typical pediatric answer of, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I like to feel like it was just sort of the dessert on our day, like it was that great final connection to our day that just left everybody feeling loved. And they're like, yeah, that'd be good.
We are so down for dessert.
Yeah. So then we began to problem solve how we could get there. So now we have mutual understanding and empathy for each other, and we have a mutual goal. And so then we problem solved how we could achieve that. And they came up with their own system of rewards and consequences that they wanted me to implement. So then I was just sort of following their orders as we worked to achieve this goal. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't perfect, but it was much better. So that process is part of what's included in our Discipline That Connects course, is helping parents learn this process of problem solving with kids so that they can feel like we own the problems that we're a part of and we can solve those. And man, imagine if every child grew up believing that about themselves, went into marriage believing that, and went into church membership or political arenas believing that.
No kidding.
I'm responsible to solve problems with the people that are most important to me.
Well, and even as the kids got older, it just became a simple thing of they would push to the last minute, do the plan that was agreed on, push to the last minute. Then they'd get in bed. Then they'd want to turn the light on and read, especially our youngest. And he got immersed in books, like big time. He got immersed in books. So it was just like, dude, if you want to read, that's cool. You can read, but I'm shutting the electricity to your room off at 10 o'clock. So if you want to read, be in bed by 9:30, not 10. Yeah, I don't remember if I ever turned the electricity. I think I did. I mean, the fuse box was just down the hall, and I'm like, okay, so it's 10 o'clock, fuse box off. No, I want to finish the chapter. I told you. We agreed. It's part of the plan. I know it's hard. I get it, buddy. I'll come in and pray for you as soon as I do this and turn the switch off and go in and pray for him. And I know it's hard for Noah, and he loves to sleep or loves to read, and he needs to sleep, and that's going to refresh him to be a blessing to people tomorrow. And so, Lord, just bless Noah as he sits here. And if he's awake for a while, just help him to think thoughts about you and blessing other people. And it's all going to be good, bud. Anything else? No, I'm good. Okay, good night. Love you. It's over. And it's over. And there was no power struggle about it. And it wasn't this big thing. And, you know, he's, I can't remember, 8 or 9 or 10 mm-hmm. years old, something.
So there's lots you can do related to bedtime to just sort of change the ambiance, change the tone. Maybe it's music. Maybe it's a lava lamp. You know, just giving kids something interesting but calming to focus on other than irritating their siblings. Yep. So that's just a little aside piece.
Well, and we frequently say this as a reminder to parents, whether it's about sibling relationships or whether it's about bedtime or whether it's about how we eat or whether it's about whether we get our screens turned off the way that we should. You know, our kids, they observe our behavior. They make interpretations out of our behavior, and they're really good observers, actually. Our colleague Chad, parent coach, helps parents understand that even though our kids are great observers, they're really terrible interpreters most of the time. And then what they take is they see what we're doing, and they view it as permission for them to do it in a childlike. What we're doing in a grown-up form, they do in a kids-like form. And so an awful lot of the misbehavior we find parents dealing with are actually childhood forms of some of the misbehavior, bad attitude issues, you know, kind of stuff like that, that parents are dealing mm-hmm. with. And then the parents punish the kids. Like, that's not okay. And the kids, they don't have language for it, but they recognize, wait a minute, I'm just doing what you've taught me, and now I'm getting disciplined for it, and you're not. What's going on here? We actually had a teenager say to us one time, like, did you think when your parents discipline you that they ever commit sins against you or misbehave in the way that they discipline? Oh, yeah, all the time.
But nobody holds them accountable for it.
Yeah, but nobody holds them accountable for it because they're the grownups and I'm the kid. Well, so how do you reckon that? How do you deal with that? Well, I just act up over here later to get back at them.
Hmm.
And at least there was some awareness of that for that young person. But I think that represents what a lot of young people experience. And so for us to, again, go back to this foundation, am I taking captive my thoughts, my attitudes, my behaviors to Christ's obedience? How's my sleep behavior? You know, how's my computer behavior? How's my relationship behavior? What are kids seeing from me in the way that I deal with conflict? You know, and sometimes they see us do that publicly, whether it's with our parents or with siblings or with our spouses. So, you know, I think in today's day and age, more than ever, because of all the power and potency of the influences outside of our homes, parents who didn't used to really have to think much about this kind of thing have got to be thoughtful, have got to be intentional about what example am I really setting? And how do I know it's the example I'm setting? Have I checked that out with my kids? And are we talking about these things so that what I think they're getting from me is what they're getting from me?
Yes. Asking some questions that you may not like the answers for.
Yeah. We you know, our parents' generation ahead took so much for granted, and it was okay because there wasn't all the potency of influence outside the home to draw people away from the values of family and faith and all the things. But today it's so different. We've got to be intentional, which is why we build the courses we build and the resources we build. And that's what Lynn and my calling in life are going to be about until they kick us out.
So good. So I do, that kind of goes into my question. As I have a little bit older kids, we tried an iPod Touch for a short time with my daughter. Since there's some attachment issues, I didn't find that was helping her attach with humans at all. And she did plenty of things to help us realize this wasn't the time for that. So now it's part of our past, or it's on pause for right now. Some of the baggage I bring into technology in my house is just fear that they're going to be doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing. Also, it feels like a waste of time a lot of times. I don't know how to put it on lockdown in a way that is, I want it just to be completely safe and always G-rated just so that I don't have to worry.
Oh.
So can you tell me how to do that? Can you sterilize the internet for my children?
Yeah, just don't let your kids have any access to technology and then it'll be fine.
I love it. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, so helpful.
We were just talking about this the other day, or was it with you or somebody else? But like, when our kids were young, text messaging was the thing. So it's more just in a decade or a little more from text messaging to kids having these devices at average age 10 that have enough technology in them to fly people to the moon. I mean, it's crazy, literally. And there's an industry using that technology to shape the values, the buying habits, the interests of these youngsters like nothing ever before. And so, like, yeah, there's reasonable fear. It's justified. You know, every family's dealing with this differently. And there are families who simply we're going to homeschool and we're going to keep our kids out of this. And, you know, in some respects that's helpful. And in others, then they, all of a sudden they go off to school and they're exposed to this stuff for the first time. And they've never had to learn how to put the internal monitors on and figure this out. And, you know, it goes crazy from there.
Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a number of ways of looking at this. And one is to think in terms of kind of getting on the same page with kids, learning to ask questions about this kind of thing. And there's a video out there called Screenagers that you could actually find a showing, go to you with your kids, and then talk about it afterwards.
Yeah.
But her whole philosophy is about having the kind of discussions with kids that give them a chance to begin to process about the wisdom of certain types of screen use. So that's one piece of it. Another piece of it is, as you said, you just have to set some boundaries, especially with vulnerable kids, and be comfortable with that and figure out how to communicate. I know this is so hard, but I also have a better understanding of some of the dangers of technology, how it affects young brains. So I'm going to set this limit, but I'm going to invest in you and your creativity outside of screens. And this is really where we have a really strong story to share, and we share it in our entitlement course about our own son. And we were having some challenges with him related to screens, and he was getting sneakier and sneakier, and we finally put a lock on the computer room door. And we came home and he's flicking his school ID, and you know, which is what he used to break into the office. And he said, "I've already broken into the office, played my games, and locked it back up."
Whoa.
He's just a smug look on his face.
Well, and there was such I remember that moment and I can picture it. It was, you know, 15 years ago, but it was so potent, because what he was saying is what's true of all kids, which is, you can't control my behavior about this. Why don't you learn to be okay? And instead of just locking doors on me, help me learn how to navigate this better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, I mean, at that time, we did have the power to unplug, you know, the computer. He didn't have access to gaming on a phone because he wasn't at that place. But it was like, so the big no needs to be, for his brain's sake, and we knew it, and he sees it now clearly. He saw it actually shortly after, you know, came to recognize that video games and that whole thing are just a soul drain for him.
He used those words.
Yeah, those are his words. But we, at that time, we're like, okay, so now there's going to be a big no because of what you just told me. And the big no is, you know, and this is going to hurt me too. We're going to shut down online access to the house. She's not going to have it. So it's not a temptation for you to go on and play the, you know, whatever it was that they, Warcraft, World of Warcraft, I think was the thing back then. But here, you know, you've been begging for one of these calculators that you can write computer programs with and maybe write some of your own games. We'll get you one. So we get him, we get him that. And shortly after that was Christmas, and we bought the kids a video camera and said, you can use technology for video production.
Oh, I love that.
And then, you know, as you're programming and as you're making videos on the computer, we just want to invite you to think about how you could use what you're doing to be a blessing to somebody else. Because that's what God built you to grow in these skills for, is so that you can be a blessing.
And that's really the key piece in the entitlement course. We call it the bigger yes. So if we have to say no, what's the bigger yes of God's purposes for you? And that ushered in for Daniel. And we put our skin in the game. Jim coached his golf team. I started helping him make props for their videos. So we invested our time and money in helping him find really fun three-dimensional activities for some of the things that he loved in the computer games. But they made some of the most amazing videos. After we got them set up with this, we got him an SLR camera, the first digital one, and he went nuts taking pictures. He started a little photography business. I mean, it just was this cascade of loving real three-dimensional life with the purpose to be a blessing to others. And it just totally turned that issue around.
Well, and it was really about coming alongside him in a way that affirmed the intensity to do this kind of thing is something God built into you. He built it into you for a reason. And so we don't want to just squelch it, because that intensity and your brain's ability to wrap around some of this stuff is going to be a blessing to the world. So, you know, it wasn't long before he was, you know, he's programming this little Texas Instrument thing to build a video game that he had little kids. And then he started teaching little neighbor kids to do the same thing with theirs.
To make computer games.
He found his way into computer programming as kind of his thing, and website design, and, you know, a bunch of stuff around technology. And, you know, kind of chased that career path for a while, and is still kind of, that's his bent, and he's taking a break from that right now. But, you know, it's all about proper channeling of all of that intensity rather than just squelching it.
That's really good. Because then they feel heard and validated and important.
Yeah.
That their needs are important to you.
And the other thing, I mean, I thought of this right away when you asked the question. It's like, because we do this in role plays sometimes. And I mean, my kids bust me using technology when I shouldn't be, even now. Like, they come to visit us at our house, and it's like, Dad, we're here for dinner and you're on your phone. You're right. You got me. Well, when they're younger, it was like, yeah, you're right. You got me. I'm going to close this now. It's hard sometimes to get off this thing. It's really hard. I mean, and if it's hard for me, and I know we've had arguments because it's been hard for you too. What makes it hard for you? So now there's a conversation like, I get you because I'm me. And there's interesting things on here that distract me from what I should be doing. And, you know, some of them are not even appropriate sometimes. And so that's me. That's my struggle. What's yours? So now we can have a conversation about it instead of just, I'm the parent. I'm right. You're the kid. You're wrong. Like, how do we let him into our journey? We're all still children of God struggling with sin and the baggage of our flesh. And so inviting our kids into those conversations, we've seen be super important for parents, and get a lot of great feedback from parents. Like, can't believe I told my kid, you know, how I spend time on my phone. But it was so helpful.
Yeah.
I want to say we'll include the link to a blog post that we have. And it's a few years old because the game that it's related to is Minecraft. But the principles.
That's still a big game, though.
Yeah. The principles are golden in how this family navigated screen challenges.
Yep.
So we'll include that link for your show notes.
Yeah. We'll do links, because we got a course about sibling stuff, too. In fact, I think you took once, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll put that on there. That's available all the time.
So is the entitlement
course is available all the time. You can do it as an individual, small groups. They're 4 and 5 sessions each. Discipline the Connects, we're running a course, you know, here in February with a community of people that join. And interact with each other.
And y'all, do you still do coaching or are you too busy for that?
No, we do coaching.
Yeah.
We're actually training more coaches now.
Yeah.
It's really grown a lot in the last year.
I am so excited because this message is so important. Thank you guys. I could talk to you forever. We're out of time.
Well, we'll do it again.
It's been so fun to chat with you.
We'll do it again. You got to come to Minnesota in the 1 foot snow.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. I think I'll wait till there's not snow though.
Okay, that's fine. It's beautiful here in the summer.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, so good to see your guys' faces again. Okay, as usual, I'm confident that you got a lot out of that conversation with Jim and Lynn Jackson. But don't be overwhelmed. You don't have to do it all perfectly. Pick one thing. What is your strategy to struggle well this week? Just pick one. I love that Jim and Lynn were talking about how when we were parented as kids, there was kind of a parenting rule book that our parents operated from. And we now have our own kind of rule book about parenting. So what do you think are some rules that you've made up that maybe aren't quite right? Maybe they're not working for you. Ask God this week for his perspective on your relationships with your parents. Are you feeling like you want to punish them on some level? Because it really just affects you negatively and then it affects your kids. So maybe you struggle well by dealing with some parent issues. Fun. Maybe you could identify with Katie's question about sibling conflict. And this week you struggle well by coaching and not managing the conflict. Like they said, remember that this is not your conflict. You don't have to take this on. Help them work through it with everybody realizing this is still their problem. This is not your problem. You can help, but it's not your problem to solve. Maybe, like Rebecca, bedtime is the worst at your house. And you could, in the daytime, when it has nowhere near bedtime, start problem solving about bedtime or with anything. I love their idea of problem solving and asking the question, how would you want to feel about bedtime or about screen time or about chores or whatever? And then talk about some rewards and consequences that they would like you to enforce. They would love to boss us around for a minute. And I think, I don't know about you, but I would love to not have to use my brain to solve something and let them solve it. I loved / hated their question about, are the behaviors that you're seeing in your kids really just your behaviors played out in a kid's way? I don't like it. So maybe you struggle well this week, and probably me too, by having a look at what of your kids' behaviors that are bothering you a lot, or you see that it's not right. How are those just an outworking of things that you actually do? I know for my daughter, her attitude is the pit sometimes. And guess what? I taught her and I taught her well. And so that's on me. And so I need to just have a better attitude and watch my nonverbals, because her nonverbal game is strong. And so is mine. So instead of focusing on hers, I could focus on my own. All right, guys, make sure you are subscribed to the show. Make sure that when you go into Best Buy and the Apple Store, you subscribe all of those phones to the show. And don't forget to join me on social media at Mom Struggling Well. Don't forget to join us on Patreon if you want additional content. Go to patreon.com/momstrugglingwell. We want to connect you with other moms who are struggling well. We sure do. There are a lot of them, and you're going to love them. There are a bunch of really great ladies. All right, I'm going to go ahead and pray for our week. Lord, parenting is hard. It's also really hysterical. Some weeks are more on the hard side. Thank you for people like Jim and Lynn who have been through it and who have the heart to figure out how to help those of us behind them to parent well. Thank you for the impact they've had. I pray that some of these truths that they've shared today would really sink in and become practically worked out in our own parenting. Thank you that you are on our side and you are for us. And you wanted us to have these kids and you wanted these kids to have us. So God, help us to see all these problems as opportunities to teach, like Jim and Lynn had said. In Jesus' name, amen.